Hi, everyone, and welcome back to our podcast, Curious to Serious. This is your co-host, Emma, and today I'm deeply honored to be sharing our conversation with the Director of Education at the Students for Sensible Drug Policy and the co-creator of ketamine-assisted psychotherapy clinic Sana Health, Vilmarie Narluk. Vilmarie is going to take us through her academic and research experience studying clinical psychology at Roosevelt University, where she also became a member of SSDP. Her interests in education, research, and enthusiasm as a member of SSDP all intersect with her work at SSDP's National Org as the Director of Education. Vilmarie also shares how her experience as a Latina woman and as a leader has shaped her mission to make the psychedelic field more accessible and inclusive. On a more personal note, Vilmarie shares with us how she aligns her work with her community. While she is always adding new certifications, practices, and projects to her plate, Vilmarie will also take a deeper look into her mindfulness practices. I'm appreciative to have shared this space with her, and I think this conversation will be growth-inspiring for all harm reductionists, educators, and patient-first researchers in the psychedelic field. So be sure to check out the timestamps below in the description for a more detailed breakdown of today's interview. Curious to Serious is Psychedelic Grad's podcast, where we interview students and professionals in the psychedelic space to better understand how they navigated their path from being curious about psychedelics to wanting to dedicate their careers to psychedelics. This podcast wouldn't be here without MAPS, whose support has allowed us to keep the online Psychedelic Grad community platform free for all members and publish these epic conversations. This podcast was an absolute honor to make, so without further ado, here is Vilmarie. Well, welcome, Vilmarie, to this episode of Psychedelic Grad's Curious to Serious. Very happy to have you.
Thank you, Emma. I'm super excited to be here and to chat with you today.
So let's start off with a bit of your background academically.
Sure, academically. So I have a doctorate in clinical psychology from Roosevelt University. So let's see. Yeah, so I studied psychology all through college. It was my first major. I kind of like knew that that's the direction I wanted to go in general, and have been sort of like refining what that means for me as I go. So in undergrad, that meant shifting from my focus from working with children and adolescents, ADHD and other sort of behavioral concerns, to kind of a big shift to working primarily with adults, but also adolescents with substance use disorders. And that happened a little bit randomly because my advisor at the time was just sort of like, hey, we have this program, this drug and alcohol counselor program here. It's only a few more credits for you to get the coursework. So I was like, oh, okay. Well, let me just like throw that in under my belt. Like, why not? And so that, of course, kind of catapulted me into that world and that, you know, focus area. And I sort of stayed there for my master's and into my doctorate program. And that was sort of the thing that got me connected to you ultimately, but also, you know, all of SSDP. And that when I went to interview at Roosevelt before I went into doctor school, I was introduced to a person who was doing a whole lot of research and stuff on substance use trends and treatment in the sort of Chicagoland Midwest area. That person was Kathy Kane Willis, and it was through the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy, which was hosted at Roosevelt University. And so once I got accepted, she was the first person I reached out to and said, hey, I'm coming to Chicago. Like, let's work together, please. And fortunately, she was willing to give me a position. So I got a graduate research assistantship position with the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy. And Kathy was also just so happened to be the advisor for the SSDP chapter there, that's Students for Sensible Drug Policy, and told me that I should check out that meeting. And I did. And that's where I got introduced to SSDP. And so my whole like deep dive then into harm reduction was really thanks to Kathy and other SSDPers who brought me into the fold at the time at Roosevelt. And that sort of then became my area of focus. So I went from, you know, just the treatment of substance use disorders to obviously a more broader look at harm reduction and how that impacts, you know, people who use drugs and the, you know, community at large. So that's sort of more of the academic-y side of things for me. And then, of course, back in 2018, I decided to also throw in some psychedelic-assisted therapy. So I did the California Institute of Integral Studies Certificate Program on Psychedelic Therapies and Research. And that has, you know, once again, sort of shifted my focus a little bit into that world. So.
Amazing. You got the certification because why not? You know, you're already involved. For those listening who might not know, and you might be the best person to ask, how would you define harm reduction?
Harm reduction as I understand it, and as probably I think initially defined by the late Dan Bigg of Chicago Recovery Alliance fame, is really any positive change. And so in practice, that means meeting people where they are in life, in their experience, and really celebrating any positive change they make toward the things that make their life better. So, you know, whether that's drug use, whether that's, you know, other behaviors, whether that's housing, you know, whatever the case may be, harm reduction, very broadly, generally defined, is that.
I could see how you could find yourself involved in harm reduction and policy and with SSDP after your interest in substance use disorder, because it's quite fitting in that type of treatment, positive change, right? Like at its most basic level.
Right. Yeah. And I kind of recognized later on once I got into grad school that I was actually quite fortunate because my undergrad program was really very sort of Rogerian client-centered focused, which I didn't recognize at the time was kind of rare in our like region. And so that was always sort of embedded in the way I saw things. I didn't necessarily understand it as harm reduction, like in those terms, but certainly the meeting people where they're at, the sort of tailoring the work to the person that you're working, all of that was a big part of how I learned about psychology and how I learned about people in undergrad. And so, you know, it really set the stage for me to, it was just a transition into harm reduction because I was already thinking that way. I just didn't necessarily know the words. I didn't necessarily know that there was anything to describe that or to explain that.
Well, I feel like it seems to connect your interest later to psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. And when you said meeting people where they're at and hearing your academic journey through the field, I'm reminded of the Zendo pillars. When I hear meeting someone where they're at, it's immediately where my mind kind of goes to. So it doesn't really seem too far off that you decided to get your training then after. I mean, it's truly embedded in meeting people where they're at and making any type of positive change or creating the space that allows them to make that positive change.
Yeah. And that's just it. I mean, working in a clinical space, working with people who use drugs, hearing their stories, their experiences of their psychedelic use and how that's impacted their life. And then also working with folks who experienced and hold a lot of trauma and recognizing now what we know now, you know, about the promise of psychedelics for addressing or helping to address trauma. That was another piece of it for me is that was a big connection I made in working with people who use drugs. There's, you know, a natural overlap of co-occurring conditions, which is another sort of focus area of mine.
Just another one.
So it was in, you know, kind of deep frustration and desperation that I experienced in working with a particular client who I knew could benefit from psychedelics that there wasn't like a way to become a psychedelic therapist. Right. And so after a session one night, I literally Googled like becoming a psychedelic assisted therapist or becoming a psychedelic therapist. And that's when I found out about the California Institute of Integral Studies program. They had just launched the applications for their first. And so a lot of circumstances later, I wasn't able to apply until, you know, I think the third cohort, but it was kind of one of those things where it was like, okay, I guess I have to do this now because like the universe is telling me, it just gave me the answer via Google, naturally, what to do next in life. So, yeah.
Well, SSDP was founded in 1998. So what was it like when you were beginning to get involved, and how would you compare it to what it's like right now? I mean, you're the director of drug education at SSDP. You went there from being a member like me in one of the chapters. So what was that transition like?
Yeah. So I started in 2009. Also, you know, a little bit of a, I guess, non-traditional SSDP member, and that so many folks find the organization when they're much younger, you know, during like undergrad years or between the ages of 18 to 24. I was already in postgraduate. So, you know, just for context there, it was a little bit different for me starting, but it was no less like invigorating and exciting and holy shit, validating to know that there was a group of people who like also recognized these injustices and were actually like doing something about it. It gave me a space to, you know, process, I guess, in some ways, and like act on some of the frustration, some of the rage I experienced from, you know, being a young trainee in the field and in clinical settings where, of course, there's a lot of injustice and a lot of just systemic shit. Yeah, that I was witnessing, and as a young trainee have zero control over, right? So to be able to take that and actually be able to make change and learn how to make change was like pretty mind-blowing and like huge, huge for me. And so, you know, starting out as a member, I quickly wanted to be more involved, and like, I was just like fully activated in the best way. So I, you know, was, you know, attended all the meetings and I was getting involved in more active stuff. I quickly became vice, you know, co-chair, and then later on was leading the chapter for a couple of years there. So just like kind of working my way up the ranks, I guess, not really necessarily intentionally, but because I was just like so into what we were doing and, you know, so committed to the work. And so, you know, at Roosevelt, a lot of our focus was on, you know, the overdose crisis at the time. So we did a lot of harm reduction education, a lot of like events around, you know, advocating for Good Samaritan policies, for example, and advocating for better access to naloxone and that sort of thing. So that was a big focus for us. And during that time, I was also, you know, thinking about what I was going to write for my dissertation, like what topic was I going to focus on? And actually another SSDP alum had also worked at the Illinois Consortium on Drug Policy. So Jenny Janicek Crane, heads up to you. She had done some focus groups in the year before. And I was kind of looking at that data again and decided to just kind of take it a step further. And that's what became my dissertation. It was really an overview and a look at what young people thought about their drug education experiences and what they would like to see. And not surprisingly, what they wanted was a much more like open, honest, harm reduction sort of focused approach to drug education. And that kind of became a bit of a platform for me of sorts. And I, you know, was talking about that kind of thing a lot to other members. I was working with Francis Fu, who's another Illinois SSDP alum. And we decided to start this program, this Just Say No, KNOW program at SSDP. So eventually I was on the board of directors for SSDP. And then as we were developing the project, it became clear that like this was the thing that people were into, and like we could really make it something, and decided that if that was going to happen, SSDP should hire me to do that. So convinced SSDP to hire me to develop and facilitate the Just Say No training peer education training program. And I've been doing that ever since 2016, 2016, I think, fall of 2016. So it's going to be 5 years this fall. And it's been great. it's been a great experience getting to take, you know, this dissertation work and like kind of translate it into this actual program. It was pretty incredible. I never thought that I would do anything with that, you know, paper, and to be able to actually apply some of that knowledge to something that's continuing and that, you know, people are continuing to work on in our network is pretty cool.
I was going to ask only because I also went through the stellar, dare I say, DARE program in high school. For our listeners, how would you compare Just Say No to DARE? Because I remember when I was going through the PowerPoint presentations and reading through the notes that it was a stark contrast to what I had kind of grown up learning about for 4 consecutive years as I was going through puberty and learning about drugs and had tons of access, but couldn't really ask questions. So how would you compare and contrast, I would say, the two programs?
Sure. I would say, you know, not so subtly, it's sort of like the anti-DARE in a lot of ways. I mean, it's, you know, about open, honest conversations. It's about asking questions. It's about giving actual real life information based in science about drugs and not only just information about them, but, you know, recognizes that young people use drugs. And, you know, for those who are experimenting or trying, they also should have a sense of, you know, how to stay safe when doing so and how to address drug-related emergencies if, you know, God forbid they come across them. So it's a little, you know, it's that. And it's also like, there's also, I think, a really nice, like, cultural, like, social-cultural component to it. That looks at like the history of, you know, sort of how the drug came to be in our cultural context, including like the laws and policies around it, but also just sort of like the social movements around it. It's definitely a lot more comprehensive. It's, you know, run for students, by students, or young people, I should say, not necessarily students. So a little bit of a very different approach, as you can imagine.
No, I think that was a very helpful comparison for the people listening. I find it so interesting that the first time I learned about the Good Samaritan laws was in college, how bizarre it was to learn about it after having to take mandatory DARE classes all through high school and not learning anything about Narcan or Naloxone or any real harm reduction to provide to others, just prohibition and abstinence, and how that was the only real way to stay safe, and how much we've already learned that that's completely counterintuitive.
Yeah.
How your program, the Just Say No program, fully integrates an open conversation and dialogue between facilitator and the audience. And the material itself that's being taught is not just about, you know, how the chemicals might make you feel or like what the pharmacodynamics are, but like the history, the policy, and the explanation of the war on drugs to see that it's a war on marginalized groups that use drugs, and like how it's very comprehensive. It's not just harm reduction. It's not just the history of drugs. It's a very, very well-rounded and thorough, because there's so many other, I remember there's so many substances in it as well. I mean, you really didn't leave anything to the imagination. Maybe a few research chemicals are missing, but probably not for long. But how would you hope that that material and that program is integrated into harm reduction services or even the greater psychedelic or medical field?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, we have, you know, sort of a two-tiered program, right? There's like the training curriculum for people to become SSCP certified peer educators. And then there is that sort of more like drug education, harm reduction information that they can then, you know, share with people. Ultimately, it's all available on our website, open source. So anyone can access any of it at any time. But the idea is that people become well-versed and really understanding of, you know, the nuances and all the intersections of what is drug use in our culture and society, and, you know, sort of arm themselves with more education and more resources so that they can have these open and honest conversations with anybody, be it their peers, be it legislative representative, be it, you know, a family member. So the idea is really for people everyone to become a harm reductionist.
Yeah, not to limit it to a certification, but how, you know, in being informed and educated about your use is a positive change in your use. So you are fulfilling that harm reduction, you're embodying that harm reduction pillar. Just to understand the timeline, as you were putting together Just Say No, where was your time being spent in the psychedelic field? Was there something that made you want to integrate so much of, because there were no psychedelics included in the DARE program when I was in high school. So I was just wondering what kind of prompted to envelop that?
I mean, when I first, I think it was like 2014, really early days of development, it was mostly about like what SSD peers were interested in, right? What they wanted more information about, what people were asking them about. And that really was the determining factor of what substances we would start with, like what we were going to start creating in just initial like development. And like, you know, this was all happening in coinciding my academic life and training and things like that. So there was a lot of like parallel things happening in my life while I was also developing the Just Say No training. So I was continuing, you know, in my training as a psychologist and learning more on that side of things as well. So I think just the deciding factor to become a psychedelic assisted therapist probably happened somewhere halfway through that. I think around 2015, I think. Yeah, that was when I had that frustrating experience and Googled it. So right around the middle of the development of the program. So on the one hand, you know, a lot of SSD peers are interested in psychedelics, and there was a lot happening with the psychedelic movement and research, really, you know, picking up steam and being a lot more sort of publicized. So I think it was just sort of like in the universe, in addition to, you know, just things happening in my life that got me more and more curious about this professionally.
Totally. I mean, I feel like using the word driven to describe you is slightly, for some reason, not strong enough. It seems like you wear so many hats, one most importantly being harm reduction, but I also want to hear more about the psychedelic pipeline that you put together this year as the first cohort. I mean, as if you're not busy enough, you decided to do something else with SSDP and put together the psychedelic pipeline. What was that like? What was your intention? What was the process? Yeah. How busy did it make you?
Thanks for asking about that. So it was sort of, again, one of those things where it was like happening in parallel with like things I was experiencing and things we were seeing happening and interests we were hearing about in SSDP. So me, like being a psychology trainee person at the time, like there was no resources, there was no information about like how to become a psychedelic assistant therapist until this program, which was a lot more widely publicized. And so it was a little bit of a having to figure things out on my own without a lot of support at the time. And at the same time in SSDP life, we had more and more members coming to us through MAPS, essentially. So on the MAPS website, there's a section like for students or people that are young people that are interested in this. And one of the first things that you see there is get involved in SSDP. And so more and more of our new member like inquiries were people who were really interested in psychedelics, whether it was just, you know, for the policy or for the, you know, becoming a therapist or a researcher or whatever. And so we kind of like started thinking about like, okay, how can we best serve these new members that, you know, are super interested in this? There's not a lot out there right now for that. Like, what can we do? And, you know, recognizing like the value of mentorship in my like educational academic career, knowing that I didn't really have any good mentors that I could talk to about psychedelic stuff, hearing the same from others, we decided to develop this psychedelic career development pipeline. And so it was, you know, the intention of it was to create, you know, opportunities, create a space for our members to connect with people already doing this work, and also to address some of the very real barriers for people of color entering the space, and how, you know, we're not well represented in the research, we're not well represented as, you know, as therapists. So for me too, as a Latina, I wanted to make sure that, like, you know, that was like front of mind, is like, let's make sure that we can provide a space for that. And so, yeah, so it's, we created this with the intention of, you know, first being able to connect people with mentors and start building that sort of career professional development side of things. And then the next sort of level of it is scholarship and training opportunities and other sort of like event opportunities and things like that. The sort of like ultimate level, or like the farthest reach of it, is to someday create sort of like training consortiums. So a common thing in psychology, for example, when you're trained to be a psychologist, is you have to get your internship and oftentimes a postdoctorate fellowship. And a lot of organizations or agencies or universities will create these consortiums where they sort of like partner with other like treatment facilities or counselors or research labs or whatever as like a collective to be a training site. And so I sort of got the idea from that like, what if we created essentially a training consortium that combines all of the various organizations and nonprofits and research hubs that are doing this work to provide training opportunities, like legitimate training opportunities that could be, you know, counted toward licensure, you know, for their hours or whatever for licensure, but within, you know, the psychedelic specific space. So that's something still in the works. That'll hopefully happen someday. But of course, our first focus is on the mentorship component. So we're now in the second cohort of that.
Would you consider that to be one of your goals for the near future, to really make that training process more accessible to the people in SSDP and within that pipeline?
Yep. Yeah, that's the idea.
It's amazing. I have to ask, it sounds like you're doing a lot for everyone else. And I probably speak for many when I say I deeply appreciate the work you're doing. But for everyone listening, I also want to ask, what do you do to take care of yourself? Like, what mindfulness-based practices do you do to keep all of your hats on rotation so that you can always say, yeah, what the heck, I'm going to get another certification, or yeah, what the heck, I'm going to tackle another institution that has marginalized groups historically, medically, or through policy. Like, you can't get enough. But how do you rejuvenate yourself? Is it a cucumber spa, a nice book, some meditation? Give us the secrets.
All those sound lovely. Thank you for asking that. That's not a question I feel like I'd asked very often. So, and it's hugely important, you know, in harm reduction. We can't really care for others if we're not caring for ourselves, right? So for me, it's a few different things. I mean, anywhere from like, you know, having some Netflix, you know, sessions during the week just to kind of chill and like settle my system. I also exercise like pretty intensely, very regularly, like at least 4 times a week. That's like probably my primary thing. If you can't tell, I'm definitely like more on the more anxious side, right? So I have a lot of energy that needs to be released. So that helps actually kind of balance things out, because it helps me then be able to relax. Expending that energy is kind of like a necessary thing. And, you know, endorphins, all that good stuff. And it's, you know, also building community and all of that. So that's one. I also enjoy painting. That's something that I've actually been trying to get back to in the past couple of years, because it was like a thing that brought me so much joy when I was younger. And it's a thing that's like come up in multiple like psychedelic experiences of a thing that like, do that again. So I've been doing that, which has been lovely, slowly but surely. I enjoy music. And so listening to music, I like to sing. My husband's a musician, definitely leaning on the people in my life and spending time with friends and family. Just kind of have some work-life balance. Imagine that, you know? So things like that is just like being able to take time away from the work stuff is important. And it's hard for me. I think it's hard for a lot of SSD peers because like SSDP is the thing, right? It's your school life. It's your work life. It's like the thing that you do for fun. So it's definitely a challenge and something we talk about a lot in SSDP is that self-care, is that giving yourself that time and space. So yeah.
Yeah, especially if your goal is to provide harm reduction to others, you know, who heals the healer? You have to do the inner work so that you can maximize your interactions with others, especially if you're trying to help them help themselves. I want to ask, through your experience with harm reduction and in the psychedelic field, what was it like coming in as a Latina woman? Like, how do you think that has impacted your interest in opening up gates that have been closed historically in so many disciplines that are intersecting in this field?
Yeah, I think in a lot of ways, it's for a lot of reasons, it's forced me to connect more with my roots and my identity, like for myself. So that's, I guess, maybe another answer to the self-care question is, you know, kind of digging back into that. I've spoken Spanish all of my life, for example, but you know, you lose a little bit when you are only around people who speak English for the most part. So the past couple of years, I've been taking part in this sort of Spanish learning community with a bunch of people just like me who, you know, live in the States, for example, and either were born in their, you know, country of origin or family members, or connecting with other people who have experienced similar like identity struggles the past couple of years has been hugely, hugely helpful to be able to, you know myself enough to actually dig into some of the psychedelic work. And it's also, it shows up in a lot of different ways, in the ways that who I choose to interact with and who I want to collaborate with and who I want to support in the work, because I understand what it's like to, you know, be someone that people don't think is valuable because of where you're from. So, you know, having that sort of, having had those experiences, it's super important to me to be in community with people such as myself. So I have, you know, a few of my Latina friends within the space that, you know, I'm connecting with more and more now, and it's, you know, hugely valuable and important. And then also just continuing to advocate for those of us out here trying to make it work and serving our communities. And, you know, that's another piece of work that I'm doing is starting a nonprofit, because again, why not? So, so I'm starting a clinic with a few more folks here in Chicago called Sana Healing Collective. Mm-hmm. And a big, you know, there's so many reasons for us to do it. But for me personally, one of the things was like, as a Puerto Rican woman, to like, own a business, to own a psychedelic business that is, you know, essentially approaching the work completely differently than what people are used to, is kind of a big deal, I think. you know, my colleague Megan likes to say, like, we're creating the new paradigm. And, you know, for us, that means like, insurance companies don't get what we're doing. You know, the medical system isn't necessarily set up to understand the kind of work that we're doing. So we're kind of, in a lot of ways, making it up as we go, as the community, you know, determines. So connecting to my own identity and like accepting who I am has been a big part of me being able to get to this place.
Thank you so much for sharing that with me. I also want to note that Sana Healing Collective, you're going to be facilitating ketamine-assisted psychotherapy. But I also saw on the website that you were planning on hosting group services and for sessions and group integration. Mm-hmm. My heart warms when I hear that, especially hearing about how deeply compelled you are to create safe space for people that have not felt safe in their exploration for mental or psychological wellness, and creating that type of group environment is so holistic and so counterculture of the medical field historically, when, you know, they claim patient before profit, but do one-on-ones, and you can't do group sessions or integration sessions with some type of clinical trials because there are certain barriers, even after things are still regulated but legal, like ketamine assisted psychotherapy, having the patients do the PHQ-9s throughout the process so that the insurances can validate that the treatment is helping them. There's so many things to be said for that, but it's incredible to hear that you're working with group healing sessions and integration processes. So I hope for anyone listening in the area that that is a space that they can feel safe entering. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. You know, one thing we've been talking about a lot as we are getting ready to launch is like, we're responding to hearing our community reach out to us, right? You know, with that sort of in mind, recognizing that community is the medicine, right? Mm-hmm. So we went from like, you know, thinking of doing the, you know, quote unquote, more traditional, like one-on-one session and and recognize that like, one, not super accessible, right? Just from a financial standpoint.
Absolutely.
And two, you know, it's one thing to have your session and work one-on-one with a therapist. That's super important and valuable. And so much of our processing and our healing comes from when we interact with the world and others and learn from other people. So it just seemed like such a natural human approach that we've, like, that's our focus right now, is figuring out how to best do that.
A people first model is what it sounds like.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're in a very compassionate space right now in this conversation. So I want to ask, what achievement or moment warmed your heart the most throughout your journey in this space that you really sat there and said, F yeah, we did that? And it just, oh, you felt the world giving you a hug.
Yeah, that's such a challenging question, because fortunately, I've had so many of those experiences. You know, I think one of the things that I guess I'll just say, you know, in most recent times in the development of the psychedelic pipeline, I, you know, kind of didn't know what I was doing so much. I knew how I wanted it to look in general. And, you know, so I kind of like was reaching out to folks. I was having conversations with some of my own sort of like mentors and people I was connected to in the space who I thought, you know, might have some wisdom around this kind of thing, including my own mentor, Shannon Clare, who works at MAPS PBC. She's one of the training supervisor, I think, or director of training. Can't remember the exact title. But so I had reached out to her and, you know, just sort of like, this is what we're thinking of doing. Does this sound ridiculous? Like, what can we do? And, you know, fortunately, like, she liked the idea, but the real, real great thing was she connected me with Wesley Hale, who also works at MAPS PBC. And once Wes and I and some of our other volunteers, so Brandy and Sean and other folks, kind of got together and started talking about, you know, planning and organizing this thing, it was just like a beautiful like connection of people. And it was, you know, the whole development of the pipeline was one of the first times where I actually started to feel, you know, and again, happening in conjunction with the development of Sana too. So a lot of the sort of collective work kind of coming and making sense and, you know, being able to put myself out there and have people respond in not only positive ways, but in like supportive, like, yeah, I can do this thing. And like, what does this sound like? And like people being really into it. And so I think that sort of like those things aligning and almost the serendipity of it in a lot of ways, I think was the first, one of the more recent times where it was like, this is happening. Like, we are gelling. We can actually do this, and it's going
to
be really
cool. Sounds to me like your experience was really validating, having people that could support you and not just tell you that they liked your idea, but also tell you that they're coming into this with you, not just behind you, but they're at your side. And I hope that for anyone listening that hears your story about feeling so valid in your exploration of creating safer spaces for others, I would ask you, how do you recommend they try to navigate finding that safe community that they can feel validated and supported on their journey into the field, especially members coming in that don't end up getting where they want to be able to go because it's just so difficult to navigate on your own?
Yeah, I mean, I think fortunately, there's now, so many ways to get connected to people. There's, obviously got to plug Students for Sensible Drug Policy. Students for Sensible Drug Policy is a 501c3 organization. It's a global organization built by and for young people with the primary aim to end the war on drugs. And so we do that in a lot of different ways. And it's a sort of a chapter-based organization. So we have chapters all over the world, possibly one near you. And if there's not, we can help you start one. And you get automatically connected to a community of people who want to end the war on drugs, who recognize that the war on drugs is racist, and are ready to do something about that. And the cool thing is, it doesn't have to be just about drug policy or advocacy, although that is a big focus of our organization. But we also provide a lot of, learning opportunities, like career development, life development opportunities through for example, our Just Say No peer education program, through the psychedelic pipeline. And we're continuously creating new and more things. We've got a lot of really cool trainings and other things that are coming up that we're really excited about. And then, of course, it's just being able to connect with other people. We utilize our, social medias and Slacks and emails and all that kind of things that we do in our modern times to be able to connect with each other. So if there's something that you're interested in around drugs, drug policy, drug education, harm reduction, you don't have to be a student to be involved in SSDP. Obviously we recognize that there's lots of reasons why someone might not be a student, and the drug war is one of them. So we recognize that lots of people can benefit from and get activated by SSDP. So that would be a major one. And then there's other things. There's, psychedelic societies, the Global Psychedelic Society, and they have a whole network as well all over the place. You can even, sometimes, depending on where you are, there might be like a meetup group near you, or a group that meets online, an integration group. So that's another thing that you can find through Psychedelic Society. There's, lots of different communities popping up on things like Discord and other social things. So there's lots of ways that folks can get connected to this work, to this space, but SSDP is probably going to be the best one.
Unbiased.
Shameless. Yeah.
So as we're coming into the end of the podcast, I would ask, for the people listening that deeply resonate with your journey through the field and through the education system, maybe they are already involved in SSDP or Drug Policy Alliance or IPN, just like some type of space relating harm reduction and or psychedelics. What advice do you think you have for them as they navigate this space?
Yeah, thank you. I think the first thing is get connected to other people that are also interested in this. Like I said, I've learned that community is so important. And I think especially in academic settings, we have such an ingrained, almost like competitiveness that I think is really bad. I think it's really harmful to each other. And so I think getting connected to other people interested in this is a great way to start. Folks can reach out to me directly if they have questions. And certainly we have the SSDP Psychedelic Career Development Pipeline Program. And we'll be launching our third cohort, our applications for our third cohort, probably late summer, early fall. So that's a great way to get connected to other people and mentorship, but definitely, you know, reach out. There are other people that are interested in this. Obviously, you know, if you've come to this podcast, it's because you're familiar with psychedelic grad and what a lovely community you all have built in there already. That's so intertwined with so many other communities, right? So I think, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, it's because you've already connected. So step one, you've already done it. And so I think just more of that and start reading, start, you know, attending trainings, start demanding that the trainings be accessible cost-wise, particularly for students and young people. And yeah, I think we'll continue to build something beautiful together.
Well, thank you so much, Phil Marie. And you said people could reach out to you directly. What is your best route of contact?
Yeah, they can email me at my first name, so vilmarie@ssdp.org. And I know you know that, but I just sent it to you in the chat anyway.
I'll make sure to put it in on the bio for the podcast, but thank you so much for joining me. I'm sure everyone's going to deeply appreciate listening to this. I know I did.
Thank you. It was lovely. It was really great chatting with you, Emma. Yay.
Wasn't that awesome? Thank you guys all for listening. And if you liked our podcast and you'd like to connect with like-minded spirits, make sure to jump over to the Psychedelic Grad community. The link's in the description. And if you're looking for psychedelic studies, field announcements, and job openings, you can sign up for the Psychedelic Grad newsletter, which is also in the description. Now, if you want to get in touch with Vil Marie, you can catch her contact information in the description. And if you want to learn more about SSDP or find a chapter near you, I have also put that information in the description. So I hope you learned more about the variety of journeys we can take into the psychedelic field. And please leave us a star rating if you enjoyed this podcast. And I hope to see you back here for Curious Series' next episode. Thank you.